Blog Talk Radio.
Thursday, July 13th, 2017. This is the PW Torch Livecast post-GFW Impact Show. I am PWTorch.com's Mike McMahon with PWTorch.com's Andrew Socek. Andrew, how are you doing this week?
Mike, I'm doing well. Am I on air? Am I good?
You're good, yes. We tried a little different way of connecting Andrew tonight, so I wanted to make sure that it was going to work. But yeah, no, we're good. And let's get right to it. A lot to discuss this week, both with this show, but I think the discussion is going to be a little bit more about what's going on behind the scenes. Obviously, the news of Alberto El Patron getting in trouble in the Orlando airport on, I believe it was Sunday. The news broke on Monday. He was suspended on Wednesday, I believe. There's a lot of news regarding that situation. And then, of course, news on Jeff Jarrett's conference call that happened yesterday afternoon as well, where he dropped a lot of news and notes and also talked about the El Patron situation. So we're going to start with that. Andrew and I will get to running down the show in a little bit. We're going to get to your calls, though, right here in this first segment. So hang on. If you are on the line, you can give us a call at 515-605-9345. Just make sure you hit the number one. That will let us know you want to get in the caller queue. But we're going to get to calls pretty early on a very newsworthy week with a lot of stuff going on when it comes to GFW. So let's start with the biggest story, I think, of the week. Alberto El Patron suspended by Global Force Wrestling after he – well, not after. I think he's currently being investigated by the Orlando Police Department for – an incident that occurred between him and his fiance Paige at the Orlando International Airport on Sunday. They're calling it an ongoing. The Orlando Police hasn't given a whole lot of information. They've given a statement to, I think, Pro Wrestling Sheet, where they said it's an ongoing investigation, and that's about all the news that has come out. There was recordings that came out. A person at the airport, a fan, actually made an audio recording of the incident, and I believe Heavy.com released that audio earlier this week. GFW at the time said that they were going to do their own internal investigation. They then decided on Wednesday to indefinitely suspend El Patron. So I guess first off, Andrew, what was your take on how they handled this situation? Because we can get into it. You know, I sort of have an opinion that it's not, they can't control what happened, but they also knew a little buyer beware of what they were getting into with this guy when they signed him. But in your opinion, how did they handle this situation? Because I sort of think that they did what they needed to do here. It would be hard to not, you know, not suspend him. So I feel like they made the right choice. It's really, they weren't really left with much of another choice.
Yeah. I'm actually pretty surprised that they suspended him. Impact TNA does not have a big history of doing that. I mean, the only one that pops into my mind is when Jeff Jarrett was sent home with the affair with when he was dating Karen Angle. Yeah, so TNA has a really shady history like that of letting, you know, like one drug user after the next who was let go from WWE come in and not really keeping a close eye on him. It's a good thing. I mean, like you said, there really is no other choice, but it seems even though in the past they would try to find another way around it. So that's a good move on the management's team. I think a lot of fans are kind of getting sick of the whole situation with El Patron and Paige, and I think they're losing a lot of goodwill by having him as the top wrestler in the company.
Absolutely. No, I totally agree. I think that the thing that comes to mind is I think they had a situation maybe about a year ago with Bram, or may have been longer than that, but he was investigated for a similar issue. I think it was a domestic violence type issue. He was suspended during the investigation. There were never charges that came from that situation. He was cleared, I believe, and they lifted the suspension and he was back on TV. So that's, I think that's the very least that they could do is suspend the guy while the investigation's going on. I think from a company standpoint, they don't have an option. They have to do that. Of course, there's several other questions, though, that come up with this. What do they do with him as the world champion? I mean, granted, that was a relatively new development. He only won it a little over a week ago, but he is your world champion. And then the other question that came up on Jeff Jarrett's conference call yesterday was, what do you do with these television tapings? And Jarrett made the point that it was going to be too difficult and hurt their brand too much to completely edit him out of the television tapings. Because you're looking at, you know, basically 5 weeks worth of television. He's a central part, if not the most central part, of their storyline as the world champion. It would have been, I think, way too difficult to edit him out of the show. That being said, I felt it was very uncomfortable tonight watching him on the show booked as the hero babyface. Even though you know this incident occurred after these tapings happened, it's not just this one incident. You know, there's a history with El Patron and this relationship. They've had issues in the past. So just knowing the history and knowing the end result of what happened over the weekend, I don't know if they could edit him out of the show. I'm not saying they should have. I don't think it really is possible. I don't know what you fill. You know, if you look at the fact that we're talking about 5 or 6 episodes here, and he's a central part of the storyline, you could be talking about a dozen or more segments that you would have to edit out over the next 5 weeks and fill it with something. And I don't know if that's really possible. If it was a mid-card storyline, I think, yeah, you take it out of the show, you fill it with something. Who cares with what? You know, you fill it, replay some matches from Slammiversary if you want. But if it's sort of this mid-card thing, or the guy's only featured in a couple of matches, if it's a mid-carder, then you get him out of the show, and that's fine. He's such a central part, I think it would have been difficult to do. What were your thoughts on them deciding that, hey, you know what, these shows are in the can, there's really nothing we can do, and we're just going to keep them as they are?
Yeah, the timing for them was about as bad as it gets, because tonight's episode was basically revolved around him and Bobby Lashley. So to take him out, you'd be looking at 20 to 30 minutes of footage being taken out. So they'd really have to scramble then to take the other week's worth of programming and fit them together and make it all seem coherent. So, yeah, I mean, I can't. Like you said, I mean, they should have known to not probably build their company around the guy at this time. But I do feel kind of bad for them in that sense that, I mean, it happened and now they have a huge mess on their hands and it couldn't have come at a worse time for them.
Yeah, they're stuck. You know, they've got to deal with it. It happened. But like you said, I also think there's a little bit of buyer beware here, where you knew what you were getting into. Okay, this guy has a history, yeah, not only in his relationship, but you look at the Twitter social media ramblings that he's gone on in the past, where he's threatened people. I mean, just last week there were reports, and it, from what I understand from talking to some people that were at the tapings, this is what actually happened, where he went on a tirade after one of his matches. He cut a promo off air, just ripping WWE, and it really got intense, and he was using a lot of language, and they were trying to drown him out with his own music just to get him to shut up. So, I mean, this guy is off the rails in more ways than one. And obviously, the personal situation with his relationship with Paige is, it's ugly. You know, it's not, at least from what we've learned and what's been out there and what's been reported, it's not a healthy situation. It's not a good situation for either of them. And you hope that they get the help that they need and that they can get through this. But from a GFW standpoint, yes, he's their world champion, but you know, I almost sort of feel like there's been enough evidence in the past that maybe you shouldn't have been so eager to put this guy as your top babyface and give him the world title when you know that he's a little bit of a loose cannon. You know, this isn't something that's come out of nowhere. You know, there's been a history here where maybe they should have been a little more cautious before they really invested heavily in Alberto El Patron.
Oh, completely agree. I mean, they should have been upfront with him right away, in the sense, like, if you're on good behavior and if nothing, no big controversies break out in a few months, we'll build around you. Because they heavily invested in him. I'm sure he's top 2 or 3 paid in the company. but they didn't really have anyone to bid against because he wasn't ever going to go back to WWE. He'd have to go back to Lucha Underground, although those series had already been taped. So all he really had was Ring of Honor. So there was no need to bring him in, give him a ton of money, and then build around him the way they have. It just seems like a complete mess in that regard.
Again, the number is 515-605-9345, 515-605-9345, if you want to get on the phone lines and discuss this situation and anything GFW and Impact Wrestling. We're going to get to the phone calls in just a second. Last thing, Andrew, I know I said I felt a little uncomfortable watching the show tonight, just where he's positioned as the number one babyface and the big hero. Was I alone in that, or did you feel like it was a little uncomfortable not only watching him on the show, knowing what happened, but seeing him positioned as sort of the big hero of the company?
Oh, no, I'm completely with you. I don't know what else they could do. I mean, I briefly thought like maybe they could just insert some booze. That would probably be too goofy and not come across well. But yeah, just terrible, terrible, awkward timing.
Yeah.
Because if this was shot live and it played out like that, it would be horrifying. So, I mean, yeah, again, they just had to put it on the air, but it was just not good for anyone.
And you know, they're stuck. We've said that, you know, the way they tape their television, it's not like they're live every week. They don't have the option of going anywhere else. And I get it. You know, it doesn't mean that it made it any less uncomfortable. But it is what it is. And it's not like they have enough things in queue where they could just queue up something to fill, you know, you're talking, like you said, 20 minutes this week, maybe 20 minutes next week. I mean, if El Patron is featured in roughly 15 to 20 minutes of the next five episodes, you're looking at them having to edit out and fill 100 minutes over the next 5 weeks. That's almost an entire episode that they would have to fill with something. I don't see how they would have been able to do that unless they... And it could have just really interrupted the flow of the show. If you took out everything Alberto El Patron and waited till Destination X on August 17th to do a tournament or strip him of the title, do whatever you're going to do, I just don't know what you fill, you know, roughly 100 minutes of television with without it really feeling awkward and disrupting the flow of the program. Let's get to the phone calls, though, and we'll get one here before our first break. It's area code 615. 615, please state your name and where you're calling from.
Hey, guys. This is Kenny from Gallatin, Tennessee. I'm a VIP member. Obviously, you guys have been talking about the Alberto El Patron situation, and I want to throw in this kind of an interesting scenario for you guys that could be used in essence for future Impact tapings if they do decide to strip them of the title. One of the things that I suggested in an email to Wade and Jason on the Wednesday livecast show was that they could do like a real tournament, almost similar to what the then World Wrestling Federation did in 1988 after they stripped Andre the Giant of the championship. You know, actually have most of your roster compete, you know, almost like I guess, a 24-by-32-man tournament and kind of build it around Bound for Glory, which is, in essence, kind of a little too late for that. But, you know, they can really use that as more of a vehicle to showcase a lot of the talent that they have there, like EC3 or Moose or James Storm, and really kind of build them up and actually have some good matches and actually make the Impact show seem like it means more if they have something to chase in the forms of a championship and make the championship mean more than what it is right now, you know, in essence. And again, we just don't know what they'll do past the TV tapings they tape now, but that was an idea that I suggested, that they actually have, you know, a real hard tournament to crown a new champion if they do go that route. And I was wondering if you guys agree with that sentiment or not.
Andrew, what are your thoughts on that? Because they did something similar a couple of years ago. I think it was coming out of Bound for Glory, where Matt Hardy beat EC3. Then they, you know, they ran this angle where they were going to get lawyers involved, and they had the World Title Series. That was done because they were up in the air with what they were going to do with their television. I think that was before they went to maybe that was when they were on Destination America and they were finishing up their run there, and they were just taping matches to fill out the last 2 months of shows. Mm-hmm. But what are your thoughts on that? I mean, if they're going to strip him of the title, which we haven't even discussed whether or not they should, and it might be even too early to say, if they were to do that, I am a fan of going with some sort of tournament because they have access now to a lot of different talent. So it's not just the talent on their roster. They have Pro Wrestling Noah. They have AAA. They could get a lot of people involved. What are your thoughts on them using a tournament vehicle if they were to strip him of the title to crown a new champion?
Yeah, that was my thought as well, that I think it would be a lot of fun because of the Noah and AAA and all the other connections. Like, there'd be a lot of good, new, exciting talent, kind of like they're doing with the X Cup right now. The only thing that pops out to me is that the situation behind the title stripping would be kind of overshadowing the tournament almost. Because if you run it out to Bound for Glory, you're going to have to keep ignoring the fact that Alberto El Patron was stripped of the title due to a real life domestic incident. There's really no good answer of what they should do, but that just kind of sticks out in my mind that it would just kind of be always in the background of why this tournament is going on.
That's a good point. You know, you almost wonder from that standpoint, are they better off going with, okay, our world championship committee has named, pick your guys, you know, Moose and Bobby Lashley are the number one contenders. We're going to have one match, crown a new champion and quickly move on. That might be the only drawback, Kenny, of doing a tournament is that it does sort of drag it out a little bit. And it keeps that cloud, you know, over their head as opposed to maybe just pulling that Band-Aid pretty quickly and getting a new champion crowned, fairly soon. But I do like the idea overall of tournaments. I'm a big fan of it. I think you see it work in New Japan. I mean, people get excited, you know, for the New Japan tournaments, whether it's Best of the Super Juniors or the G1. I mean, people get really excited for these. And if you could build it the right way, especially with the access to some talent that they didn't have the last time they ran a big sort of company-wide tournament, I think it could work.
Oh, I agree with what you guys said 100%. You know, the access of international talent would really make it mean more than what it already has. But then again, you could have what you had with WCW in 1999, where the tournament was so, well, let's just put it that way. It was definitely not booked the right way. And you do have that, like you just said, a Moose Lashley scenario that, quite frankly, would just lead to disaster. And it's all about, you know, booking it right. If you book it right, you know, and like you just said, with New Japan, then it goes so smoothly and it goes through, the process just runs so smoothly. Like, you know, the crowning of the U.S. championship that Kenny Omega won was just a great example of that. And that alone is worth the risk, especially because this, I mean, whether or not Alberto El Patron was the right guy or not, I really felt like it was just like a rush deal making him champion anyway. I really liked Lashley as champion anyway. And in a lot of ways, it's kind of like redemption for him. And the irony is this will help showcase the international talent as well as new talent if they do go that route. And I just wanted to throw that idea. Obviously, you're getting close to the break, and I really appreciate you guys taking my call, and you have a good rest of the night.
Thanks, you too. The one thing I think if they were to do it, Andrew, this time around, if they were to do a tournament, would be it would have to be a little shorter. That world title series, while I think the concept was good, now that ran 2 or 3 months, and it was the same thing every week.
Oh, that was brutal.
There was just no storyline behind those matches, and it was because they didn't know what they were going to do from a television standpoint. They also had no money. So those television tapings out October after Bound for Glory was all they taped for the rest of the year. They had like 3 months in between television tapings. So I think they could do it, but shorten it up a little bit and they were doing men versus women, if I remember, in the world title series. They had matches that were like men versus intergender matches, and it was kind of a mess. But I don't think it's a bad idea, but I do think the one issue, like you said, is that it sort of hangs the cloud out there even longer. I guess, you know, the other part of this whole conversation becomes, should they strip him of the title? I think it's a little too early to say. I want to get your thoughts on this, though, before we go to the break. I think it's a little too early to say. You know, I've had that people ask me that on Twitter this week. Do you think they should strip him right away? And it's like, well, while I think there's some serious issues with him, and while I think, you know, GFW needs to be very, very leery of what they do with him moving forward, there is also, you know, a little part of me that says nothing's been charged, you know, as far as we know. I don't know from a legal standpoint what they open themselves up to if they were to just strip him of the title and fire him now, where, you know, he's been accused of something, but he hasn't been charged or found guilty of anything. So maybe it's an open contract and they have all the leeway in the world to just say, you know what, it's bad PR, we're not dealing with this, you're fired, and walk away from the guy. Also, the fact that they're 1099 independent contractors and not employees, maybe that makes a little different too. But I just don't know from a legal standpoint if they're going to wait to see how this plays out before they do anything drastic, like stripping him of the title or firing him altogether, to see how the situation plays out. I mean, clearly, though, whether or not this situation plays out well or not, I don't think it's going to get better. I think there's a history here in a destructive spiral where things are probably going to get worse. So they should distance themselves from El Patron sooner rather than later, whether it's, you know, immediately or a few months down the road or a few weeks down the road. But what do you think on what they should do with him and the title? Is it something that they should just strip him of the title and sort of get this guy off their roster as quickly as possible and move on? Or do you think that they sort of need to wait and see how this plays out?
I think they need to wait and see how it plays out. Like you said, he hasn't been charged. We heard some audio. I mean, she admitted to throwing a drink at him, I believe. But still, I mean, that doesn't, we don't know what he did exactly at the moment. So maybe he's innocent of this, but even if he is, it just keeps happening time and time and time again. I mean, you go back to last summer and he was mysteriously stabbed. And in some versions of the story, she was there and in some she wasn't. So, I mean, that really kind of accelerated things. And there's just been one incident after the next. And like you said, he's been shooting on WWE, which reflects poorly on Global Force. What they should do is bring him in and have him lose to somebody, as long as he's cleared by the police. They just need to let him know, like, you cannot be the face of our company if things like this keep happening. You have to drop the title. You can stick around with us, but you're not going to be the number one guy anytime soon again.
And that's the thing that would concern me at this point, where, like you said, I mean, I forgot about the stabbing incident. There's so many things that have followed this guy over about the last year, and it just seems to be very toxic. I mean, that I don't want to judge people's personal lives. We don't know what's going on, but that relationship seems to be very toxic, and there's mm-hmm. been more than one issue there. And you can't help but feel bad for the people involved and hope that they find the help that they need and can move on with their lives. But I don't know if you can trust him. If you're Jeff Jarrett, even if you want to bring him in to have him just drop the belt and then have him move on, if he knows he's coming in to drop the belt and he's never going to be on the show again, can you trust him to go out there and do it? I mean, I certainly wouldn't trust it in a live situation. You know, I wouldn't do it even if he's cleared. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't do it August 17th on a live episode because I'm not sure you can trust him out there on live TV with a live mic and live cameras. I think if you want to have him drop the title in a match, maybe you can have him do it on a tape show and hope he doesn't go off the rails. And if he does, you have the power to edit it out. But it almost might be easier for them to just strip him of the title, fire him, and say, that's it. No, we're done with you. You're not coming back.
That's a good point. I mean, I guess depending on how it plays out and if the police, if it becomes a bigger issue, I mean, it's tough.
Yeah.
they have no good options, but they only have themselves really to blame for this.
Exactly. Well, we're up against it. We're actually late for our first break. We'll come back, though, with more phone calls at 515-605-9345. And then we're going to get to discussing some of the news and notes from the Jeff Jarrett conference call that took place yesterday. And then Andrew and I will actually get to talking about this week's episode of Impact in a little bit as well. Again, the number is 515-605-9345. We're going to take a quick break and be back right after this.
When you're looking to tune in live to the PW Torch Livecast, find out about the next episode, or just catch up on an episode you missed, go to our new website, pwtorchlivecast.com. You can select shows by specific day, specific host, and format, including a grid of our latest interviews and best of selections on the homepage. That is pwtorchlivecast.com, where you can stream our show live and listen to past shows on demand. That's pwtorchlivecast.com.
Back here on the PW Torch Livecast, you can check out pwtorchlivecast.com for the newest additions to the PW Torch Livecast lineup. If you haven't yet, you can go over to Podcast One or on any of your podcast apps, including iTunes, and subscribe to the new Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast, which is going to debut on Podcast One next Tuesday, July 18th. So all of Wade's shows are moving over to Podcast One, but there's a lot of cool new lineup, cool new additions to the PW Torch Livecast lineup. Our show is obviously staying here, and I believe, Andrew, that we can now say that we are the longest running PW Torch Livecast show on the on the network. Although we've only been around 3 months, because Greg and Pat's show wasn't every week. Now they are on Sunday nights, mm-hmm. Wrestling Night in America, which is, I can't wait for that. I think that's going to be great. Sunday nights at 8 o'clock. Rich Van was part of the network before with Primetime Friday with Bruce Mitchell, but he's on his own now. The Deep Dive with Rich Van on Saturday nights. Jim Valley's back, which I'm looking forward to. So there's a lot of cool new additions, but I believe we can say that we are the longest running show on the Livecast network. All of 3 months.
Yes. Oh, I'll take it.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, let's get back to the phone calls. 515-605-9345, and this is Kylan in New Jersey. Kylan, how are you?
I'm very well, Mike. How are you and Andrew doing this?
I'm pretty doing pretty good, yeah. What do you got first tonight?
First off, I hate to be the bearer of bad news, but you seem to have forgotten the show when you were running through the list of podcasts. You forgot to mention the East Coast cast.
Ah, that's right.
Oh, boy.
Which the East Coast cast has been on for 6.5 years.
True, but I'm giving ourselves credit because we're the longest running show on the live cast. Now I'm being very specific so I can give ourselves as much credit as possible.
Well, your last name is McMahon, so I guess we should have expected that.
Exactly, it runs in the family. Revisionist history. It's what we're right. The best at.
I have some things from the conference call that I wanted to discuss, but I wasn't sure if going into today's show that we would be allowed to discuss them, so...
All right, absolutely, sure. We're actually going to touch on a few of those things in a little bit, but absolutely, bring up what you want to bring up now. I would say bring it on.
Okay, so my first thing I wanted to discuss, since we did see another grand championship match tonight, between Moose and the man that Seth Rollins stole the blackout stomp from, Mara Fuji, which Seth acknowledges that on his DVD and on the special that aired on him a while ago. What do you think of Jeff finally acknowledging that there will be a full rebranding of Impact into Global Force, and we will have 4 official divisions and the grand championship may or may not be eliminated, which, in my opinion, the grand championship will be eliminated because every week it's been competed for in the same monotonous match style of round 1, babyface, round two heel, round three, barely goes to the baby face.
I'm agreeing with you. I think they're going to keep it around, or if they weren't, it wouldn't be featured on TV every week. I'm over it at this point, like you. I think it's become the same formula every week. I also noticed tonight, another thing that they very similarly do is that it's never a unanimous round. There's always one judge that gives it's always a 29-28 round, it seems like. Very rarely are they 30-27s, even when someone clearly dominates a round. So I agree with you. I'm sort of over the whole presentation. I do think it's going to stick around, though, or else they wouldn't be featuring it every single week on TV, or at least talking about it every single week. And they're going to have EC3 and Moose feud over that title in the upcoming weeks heading into Destination X, it appears. But, Andrew, what are your thoughts on the rebrand and them keeping the Grand Championship around?
Oh, man. Yeah, like you said, I'm over it. Tonight, it really struck out at me. I mean, the match was fine, but it's so methodical and slow. Like, some of those chops, they're just, like, taking their time hitting each other. And if they're going to have this, they need to, like, do something different. I feel the matches should just be balls to the wall. They're going as fast and as hard as they can during those 3 minutes. But when you wrestle it as a regular style, it doesn't make any sense. It's just, you know, why even do it in the first place? I imagine it probably will stick around, but I would not be shocked if they give up on it within the next few months.
One thing that Jared also added in there is that they plan on doing something with the next gen title at the end of the year or later on this year. We'll see, you know, what that is. He didn't really give any indication of what those plans were. Just said that they plan on doing something with that later on in the year. And then Kylan, another point on the rebrand. You know, they are going to go. They've mentioned it several times. GFW, Global Force Wrestling, is the name of the company. Impact is the name of the show. One minor thing that I thought about earlier this week, and I wish they did differently with this rebrand, is they've talked a lot about market confusion and not wanting to confuse people, and they thought that that's what had happened when they've tried to rebrand in the past. If that's the case, I just wish that they went all in and got rid of the Impact name too. You know, call the show Amped. You're running the anthology anyway. Get rid of the Impact. If you want to avoid confusion, get rid of the Impact name altogether. Because for a period of time here, they've been calling themselves just Impact Wrestling as the name of the company, the Impact World Champion. So I think keeping the Impact name is gonna be very confusing as they try to get this rebrand fully on board. You know, I would have rather them see just go with Global Force, go with Amped as the name of the show, get rid of Impact altogether, and really make it a total rebrand.
Well, I understand that is what they plan to do, but for right now, for some reason, and correct me if I'm wrong, if this doesn't apply to either of you, but I know in my case, the show is still listed as Impact Wrestling as opposed to GFW Impact on my cable, guys.
It's still listed as Impact Wrestling for me as well. Andrew, I know we're also on different.
Too.
Yeah, I was going to say we're on different providers, but yeah, no, that seems to be how it's still listed. And maybe they do go with AMP down the road. And Jeff Jarrett on the conference call said that it was going to be a slower process. They wanted there to be a natural progression to their rebrand. I just don't understand. If you're going to eventually change the name of the show to AMP anyway, just do it at the same time. Just say we're called Global Force Wrestling. Mm-hmm. It's GFW AMPed. Get it over with and move on instead of this slow, eventual rebrand that I think is going to make it a little more painful as they try to go through this whole process. But what else is on your mind tonight, Kylan?
Okay, my second question, which this was also discussed in the Jeff Jarrett conference call, how soon or not soon do you see Imp or GFW, excuse me, returning into the monthly or bi-monthly live pay-per-view feeds. Since Jeff did mention that's something he would like to do at some point, and he will start by trying to add a third pay-per-view at some point next year.
Yeah, he did say that they were going to add potentially a third pay-per-view in 2018. You know, to me, I think the perfect model, especially for a company like GFW, is probably quarterly. I don't think they need to go any more than quarterly on their pay-per-views. That gives you four per year, one every 3 months. I am of the mindset that you're producing the one night only pay-per-views anyway to fulfill their pay-per-view contract. So if you're producing this content anyway, why not try to do the live pay-per-views around, you know, your Impact tapings 4 times a year? I don't know how many buys they generate, but you know what? Even if they only generate 5,000 pay-per-view buys, it's money. It's more buys than you probably would get with a regular one night only pay-per-view that has no storyline behind it and no one really, you know, cares much about. So why not try to make those a little something? I think you could go with quarterly pay-per-views and be fine. I think once a month is probably too much. I also think that quarterly pay-per-views can help them differentiate themselves from WWE a little bit. It gives them a little more of a longer build to their storylines. But yeah, I think quarterly is probably the sweet spot that they want to find themselves in. And I was encouraged by Jeff Jarrett saying they were going to add a third one. It just, if nothing else, from a booking and a storytelling standpoint, it gives you sort of these natural places to go when you're putting your show together. And it gives you endpoints where you can book a storyline to end at a certain pay-per-view where they have such large gaps, you know, between Bound for Glory and Slammiversary, for example. There's such a large gap there. You know, there's so much time to fill. There's really no natural endpoint to the stories they're trying to tell. But, Andrew, what are your thoughts on them sort of getting back a little bit more into the pay-per-view game with Jeff Jarrett saying they wanted to add a third live pay-per-view in 2018?
Yeah, I mean, I think it makes sense, kind of like what you're saying. It's very weird how the year is structured and there's no endpoint. I think they can do maybe 4 to 6. Maybe a year, every other month, but that's, yeah, on the high end. They just don't have enough top names to carry that many feuds every single month. However, I do kind of think Jeff Jarrett is a guy that thinks very big. I mean, he wanted a Monday Night War for years and years and years, and that didn't turn out so well. But so I could see him wanting to get back into the monthly pay-per-view before too long, especially if they bring in that streaming service. Because how else are you going to entice people to pay, I don't know, $5, $7, $8 a month, whatever they're planning on, if they don't run like a special event close to every month?
That's a good point. And they talked a little bit about that. But one of the things that stuck out to me on Jeff Jarrett's call yesterday was, especially towards the end, he talked about how he has all these plans and things that he wants to do. He'd love to go live every week. They'd love to run more house shows. They'd love to do more pay-per-views. But he was, at least to me, came across as wanting to do things a smart way and sort of learning from the mistakes the company has made in the past. Even if he wasn't there and wasn't involved in it, he seemed like he wanted to make sure he, you know, learned those lessons from the past and not do things too quickly to the point where they can't afford them. And, you know, at the end of the day, their financial situation, I'm sure, is better than it was. Because, you know, you're not hearing any stories now. Ever since Anthem's been involved, you're not hearing any stories about production people not getting paid or talent not getting paid. So, theoretically, the financial situation is much better than it was. But they also don't have an unlimited supply of money. So, you need to be smart, I think, with the way they expand and try to do more things. You got to make sure it's cost-effective and you're making enough money from that investment. The thing with the pay-per-view is, I can't imagine it's that much more of an investment to take out 2 one-night-only productions and make them 2 live productions to get you to 4 per year. You're doing them anyway, you know, so I don't really see how that could be much more from a cost standpoint to add 2 more live pay-per-views to replace 2 of those one-night-onlys, but maybe I'm wrong. You know, maybe there's things in here I'm not thinking about. I'm sure there's a little more cost to it, but, you know, the production people are there, the talent's there, you're producing these specials anyway. Why not produce them live as opposed to taping them with no storyline for distribution later. It just seems like it makes more sense to me to at least try to do a quarterly. Kylan, anything else you got for us tonight?
Yeah, and my final question is concerning Global Forces domestic cable television future. Jeff, very nicely, kind of, not necessarily insulted, but what would be the word I'm looking for? His current deal with Pop TV, and said that he hopes to get on a better platform in 2018. He also said that he has maintained a long-term relationship with senior officials at Spike TV. Did Jeff Jarrett clandestinely confirm my theory that I presented to you last week of Global Force going to the new Paramount Network in January?
That's actually one of the topics I had up to discuss for when we went to the Jarrett conference call stuff in the next segment. So yeah, I also took that comment and felt that, you know, he was being a little coy about it. Like you said, I don't think he wanted to upset the people at Pop TV too much. But he did talk about his relationship with the people at Viacom, his relationship with people at Spike. I believe one thing he did add there is he said something towards the end of the quote where, and I don't have it in front of me, but he said something, you know, whether it's Paramount Network, he said something to the effect of, you know, the people at Viacom have a lot of other platforms as well. So I don't know if it'll necessarily be the Paramount Network, but I believe we could see them negotiating with some sort of Viacom platform, because he did say he had a good relationship with the people at Spike and with the people at Viacom and have had a relationship with them for a long time. So whether it's the Paramount Network, which I believe Bellator, which they own a part of, or own all of, it might be at this point, they are keeping their programming on the Paramount Network. So there's going to be sports involved. With the Paramount Network, I think, makes a lot of people believe, oh, it's going to be a movie channel because of Paramount Studios. It's not. You know, it's going to be very similar to a Spike TV. There's going to be movies. There's going to be scripted television, reality-based television, some movie. You know, I'm sure they're going to be showing movies as well. But there's also going to be sports programming, and the Bellator programming is going to remain part of the new Paramount Network. So I think it'll be interesting. I think they could be one of the players for Global Force at the end of this year when their Pop TV deal is up. I think it all comes down to relationships. It all depends on how good is the relationship that Jeff Jarrett has with the people at Viacom. How good is the relationship with the people that Anthem have with the people at Viacom? Can they reach an agreement? If Viacom is interested, but I think they're one of the conglomerates that's probably going to be in play. I don't think they would be if Dixie Carter still owned the company, because I think there was there was not a lot of goodwill there. But with a change in ownership, a change in leadership, I think that they could at least have a conversation. I don't know if they'll definitely end up on the network, but I think they could at least have a conversation with them. And see where it goes. I mean, Jeff Jarrett at least sounded like he wanted to have that conversation. I'm sure he does. Andrew, what were your thoughts there on where they could end up from a television standpoint a year from now? Because the other thing that Jeff Jarrett also talked about was, you know, destination television isn't really a thing anymore. And I think that's why they're looking at a streaming service, Andrew, like you alluded to as well, that they know people are consuming their entertainment in much different ways than they were even, you know, a year or two ago.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure he would absolutely love to land on Paramount, you know, do that to their relationship in the past. And that's when the most people watched Impact was when they were on Spike. If I were him, I would be more careful, though. I mean, this show has been kicked off Spike. It's been kicked off Destination America. They may need Pop TV. So in no way, shape, or form should they be taking any sort of dig at them. I know they're not paying much, but I don't know. If worst comes to worst, they're going to need them just to stay on TV. Because I don't think they're anywhere near close enough yet to just rely, say, on streaming. I mean, WWE isn't even, yeah. You know, that's still a few years off. So I just, due to their history and due to Dixie Carter kind of upsetting multiple people in multiple television production or channels, I just think he should be a bit more careful with how he's phrasing his desire to land on a new channel.
Well, not knowing Jeff personally, but knowing the way I think he's thinking, he's probably thinking, I'm not Dixie Carter, and even though we're Pop TV's number two show, they probably have a lot of executives there that plug their nose in shame and say, gosh, this wrestling stuff is number two, but we hate it, so as soon as we can get rid of it, we will. That's probably why he feels somewhat good about insulting them whenever he can.
Oh, yeah, that could be.
All right, Colin. Hey, we appreciate the call, as always.
Thanks, guys. We'll talk next week.
Sounds good.
Yeah, good one.
You know, another thing I wanted to bring up. Sorry, Colin. I cut you off there a little too early. another thing I wanted to bring up in regards to television was I read a report this week that the brand Barstool Sports, which is very controversial, but also has a somewhat of a cult following. They are owned in part by the Chernin Group now, but they are in negotiations with Fox Sports 1 for a late night show. This is coming off of, I believe they ran a late night show on Comedy Central during the week of the Super Bowl. And it got me thinking because I saw the tweet earlier this week that said, hey, you know, the brand Barstool Sports is in talks with Fox Sports 1 about potentially a late night show. And then they threw up the viewership numbers that the Barstool Sports show generated when they were on Comedy Central the week of the Super Bowl. And the viewership numbers were very similar to Impact. It was, you know, roughly between 300 and 350,000 viewers per night, I believe it was. And it got me thinking, you know, is Fox Sports 1, which seems to be starving for anything that could bring eyeballs to its channel right now, Jeff Jarrett also has a history with the people at Fox Sports. Impact was on Fox Sports Net going back over 10 years ago before it was on Spike. It was a one-hour show at the time, but I made me think, you know, is Fox Sports 1 a network that is starving for eyeballs? I mean, they signed Skip Bayless from ESPN, and it's drawing less than 100,000 people. They just seem to be starving for anything that could draw attention to themselves, and they really, really need original programming. If Impact can draw 300,000 viewers on Pop TV, I would think it could at least draw 300,000 viewers on Fox Sports 1. So is Fox Sports a relationship that Jeff could go back to and try to land Impact on a network like Fox Sports 1, which, like I said, is just dying for eyeballs right now and trying to even carve out a little bit of the marketplace that you know, ESPN is monopolizing when it comes to sports programming. That is something that I think could be a possibility too, although there is the mystery of whether or not the UFC would stand, which Fox Sports is biggest, or one of their biggest sports entities is the UFC. They, of course, have a contract with Major League Baseball and the NFL as well, but the UFC is right up there. I think it definitely provides more programming for their networks than those other two properties. All of those other two properties generate more money, I'm sure. I wonder if the UFC would want, you know, wrestling involved in the same network that they're involved with again. Of course, they weren't partnered, but they were on the same network with WWE and then TNA on Spike before they made the Fox Sports deal. But Fox Sports 1, I when I saw that report this week that Barstool Sports is negotiating with Fox Sports 1, I looked at the viewership. I said, yeah, you know what? That's about the same that Impact draws. I would have to think that Fox Sports would be thrilled with 350,000 viewers on a weekly basis for original programming on Fox Sports 1.
That would certainly be interesting. I hadn't really thought of that much. Because, when they originally were on Fox Sports, I think 2004-ish, 2005, they were actually paying Fox Sports like $40,000 a week to air their show. And then they had these crossovers with the Best Damn Sports Show Ever, or whatever the name of that show was with Tom Arnold. A lot of silliness. So it would be interesting just to see how the tables turn and them actually make money. Fox. And like you said, like I have not even heard of anything Fox Sports related since Skip Bayless joined them. So it just seems like they are badly dragging behind even more so than ever. So I could see it. And I don't know if UFC would be that upset about it. Because like you said, the Ultimate Fighter used to be the lead in to Impact during the early Spike era. And it used to follow Raw, I believe.
Exactly. When it first started, it followed Raw. That's sort of how it built its following.
Oh, okay. So, I mean, in some ways, Dana White does owe, some of the success of the UFC to wrestling. So maybe, like Ted, he has some sort of soft spot for it and wouldn't object to it being on the same program.
But I think it's interesting because it points out the fact that despite the fact that they don't have a ton of viewers, 300,000 is still a lot of people. And when you look at the fact that it's original programming, 52 weeks a year, not a lot of networks have that. I think that with new management, because there was a stink, I think, on Dixie Carter and the management that was in there before. I think they had built up enough. There was quite a few people in the television industry that didn't trust their management. I think that's the way I would put it. But with new people in charge, there's some networks that I think they're going to have some options. Pop TV might be their only option. Who knows? It has been for the last 2 years. But I don't know if, coming up at the end of this year, that they might not have a couple of other options when it comes to television. And just pointing out whether it's connections he has with the people at Viacom or would they make sense for a network like Fox Sports 1? The point being is they could have some options when it comes to their TV, and that's something that they probably haven't had for a while.
That's true. And it also has to be encouraging that I think last week they drew their second highest rating of the year, maybe their highest, 340,000. Is that right?
I think it was. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So, I mean, they somehow, even though we've been talking week after week, how the program is inconsistent, the India tapings are pretty bad. Somehow more people are tuning in. And if they can keep that up at all during the next 5 months, then they may be able to land a pretty, decent network out of this.
All right, we are very late for another break. We're going to get to it now. Then when we come back, Andrew and I will start to run down this week's episode of Impact, and then we also have to get to our top three this week with Samoa Joe challenging for the WWE Championship this past Sunday. Our top three are our top three Samoa Joe matches in TNA history. We'll get to that, and we'll get to our rundown of this week's episode right after this. You're listening to the PW Torch Livecast.
If you're like me, you've got a list of your favorite podcasts that you listen to throughout the week and also your favorite websites that you listen to throughout the week, but they don't always overlap. But in the case of PW Torch, they do. We hope not only will you listen to the PW Torch livecast every day, but also visit pwtorch.com every day for the latest insider perspective, breaking news, TV reports, live event reports, live pay-per-view coverage, exclusive editorials, and a wide range of other features. Check it out every day. It's mobile-friendly, desktop and laptop-friendly. Stay up to the minute, stay up to date with pwtorch.com.
All right, back here on the PW Torch livecast, we are talking Impact Wrestling or GFW Impact Wrestling. I am Mike McMahon with Andrew Socek. And Andrew, before we get to running down the show, there was one more thing. I sort of had a checklist of topics from the Jarrett conference call I wanted to hit on. The last thing I wanted to bring up, Kyle and I actually got to most of them, was the touring schedule. Jeff Jarrett said that, obviously they're going to New York here at the beginning of August, and he hoped to do another tour of the Northeast in the fourth quarter. They were also looking at doing a run through Ontario. They were looking at doing a tour of the UK in the first quarter of next year, which was a staple for TNA for a long time. I imagine some television would come out of that as well. What are your thoughts on them dipping their toe back in the live events and their strategy and, you know, doing this pretty slowly? And it seems like they're strategically, you know, targeting the Northeast market. Obviously, there's a lot of people in the Northeast, but they're going there first. Jarrett talked about going back there maybe with some different markets in the fourth quarter. But what were your thoughts on them expanding that touring lineup? And at least it seems like there's an actual plan in place when it comes to live events, whereas they've talked about it for a while. They finally announced those New York shows and the one in Connecticut, but it seems like they do have a plan in place. It's just a matter of rolling it out slowly and trying not to get too far ahead of themselves.
I think it's a good move for the long term of the company. Short term, I'm a little skeptical in how many people they'll be able to draw to these shows. Because I think the problem is, even if you change the name of the company, there is still a lot of lingering bad feelings towards them. I mean, they're trying to come up with this new identity and bring fans back into the fold, get another shot from all these people. And then, you know, things like the Hardys happen. And that's still ongoing. And then Alberto El Patron, it's just like they still have this stench of TNA on them that I just don't know how many people are going to go to these shows. I mean, Ring of Honor, I think, can, you know, draw a couple thousand on some good shows. I'm just trying to imagine how many people would go to those programs. Of course, if they put on like a killer show, then that's going to establish some goodwill. So that's what they really need to attempt to do. But yeah, I think it's going to be rough going those first few shows, except for in the UK, they seem to have a pretty strong fan base there.
Absolutely. Yeah, those UK crowds are always the best of the year. The other thing to point out here with these New York shows coming up the beginning of August, Jeff Jarrett said that they were working with announcing soon some AAA talent they're going to be on those shows. I think he said there was going to be some Pro Wrestling Noah talent on those shows as well. So they're bringing in international talent even for their house shows, which I think is smart. You know, he talked about how it seemed like at times with TNA in the past there was the television roster and then the live event roster. And his point on the conference call yesterday was that's not the case. You know, you come to our live event now, you're going to see the people you see on TV. You're going to see AAA stars. You're going to see Bobby Lashley. You know, they're stacking the cards, which I think is going to help. But when it comes to this first run of shows, and to get back to what we were talking about right at the top of the show, their next television taping isn't until August 17th. We don't know what they're doing with their world champion. Right now, he's suspended. So you could go into those first run of house shows without a world title match because you don't have a world champion. And I thought about this yesterday. I was going to actually tweet something, but I don't think I ever did. What do you do? You know, if they decide they're going to strip him of the title and they're not drawing for these house shows, you know, it almost made me think, you know, you think back to this past weekend, AJ Styles won the U.S. title at a Madison Square Garden house show. Do they get out there, hey, August 4th in Brooklyn, we're going to have a camera crew there, and it's, you know, a one-night world title tournament or something. We're going to stream it on ImpactWrestling.com just to try to pump some ticket sales. I don't know. You know, maybe I don't think that's what they're going to do, but I thought it was very interesting that they could go into this first run of house shows without a world champion on the card.
That is bad. Yeah. No, I like that idea, though. Just establish goodwill with people that come to the shows, make a world title, change hands, or, you know, that's, I think, only been done once in their history. I mean, that's tough going in without your world champ, and it's just another issue for them. I mean, they have so many. Yeah, that's tough.
All right, well, let's get back to, we haven't started it yet. Let's get to running down some of the happenings on this week's episode of Impact, and then we will get to our top three in just a little bit. They open the show, and I'll try to get through this a little quicker than we usually do, where we're sort of running low on time tonight with a lot of things to discuss. But they started the show with a video package and El Patron winning the world title, and then the cliffhanger with LAX. They came out for a promo. Conan and LAX joined El Patron in the ring, and they had a back and forth. El Patron said he wasn't going to join LAX, and ended up resulting in LAX beating down El Patron. Bobby Lashley came out to make the save. And then we found out that backstage, Bruce Pritchard had booked the main event, a tag team match. So I'm going to complain about this every week they do it. But once again, Impact books a main event on the fly after the show has already began. What were your thoughts on the opening segment, both the promo, how they handled the El Patron not joining LAX angle, which I think we all sort of assumed was coming with the finish last week, and then the announcement of the main event tag match?
Comfortable. This is where that situation really came to the forefront, and yeah. It was hard to get invested in anything else. Just watching this weirdness of the crowd still just love them and process that. So I guess the segment, it was a fine follow-up, but it might not mean anything, you know, in terms of what they do with him over the next few weeks. So I just couldn't get invested in it personally.
Yeah, I was the same way. That's actually was the commentary I wrote in my report on pwtorch.com, was that it just felt uncomfortable, you know. Realizing, and we talked about this earlier, they didn't have much of a choice, but it felt uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
After that, they went to a first-round matchup in the Super X Cup. ACH beat Andrew Everett in about 6 minutes. I thought this was a pretty good match. I can't believe I'm saying this, I thought the commentary here was pretty good. They praised ACH. They gave us background on who he was. They talked about how he came through Ring of Honor most recently, and he was close to winning championships in every promotion he's been in. I've been critical of Pope on color commentary. I thought Pope was good here, too. He criticized Andrew Everett for playing too much to the crowd and wasting time. And ultimately, you know, that's what cost him the match. Andrew Everett went to the top rope and played to the crowd a little bit. He missed a move, and ACH had a brainbuster for the win. It feels weird to praise the commentary because it's been so bad for the last 6 months, but I thought it was good here. And I thought the match was good. What were your thoughts on this ACH defeating Andrew Everett match?
I enjoyed it as well. Props to Impact for finally giving us one-on-one X Division matches, because that did not happen for years. So that's cool to see. The tournament's going pretty well so far. I was confused, though. Is Andrew Everett now going back to a heel? Because like you said, Polk really played that up time and time again.
Yeah.
And just his facial expressions just seemed to be that he was already turning back into a heel.
Yeah, that's the one thing I'd be a little critical of with some of the guys in the Super X Cup right now, is that they don't really seem to know where they're going. And really, it's across the roster. Like, Bobby Lashley was a babyface at the beginning of the show. He was a heel at the end of the show, which we'll get to. But yeah, they seem to be going back and forth. After that, Gail Kim came out. She announced that 2017 was going to be her last year in wrestling. She was going to retire at the end of the year. Nothing was really set up as far as a storyline for where she might go over the next 5 months, but she has announced that 2017 will be her last year wrestling. And you know, it sort of reminded me, I don't know when they did this, Andrew, I don't know if it was before, it may have been last year or it may have been the beginning of this year, but they did something similar with Gail Kim where it made it sound like she was going to announce her retirement at one point, and they I think made an angle out of with Jade and somebody else. I don't remember exactly who. I think it was maybe it was Jade and Rosemary. And that may have been just a few months ago. But yeah, it felt a little similar, but this one seemed genuine, that she's going to wrap up her career at the end of the year. And it'll be interesting to see, I think, what they do with her these last 5 months. I think they might use her to get Sienna over a little more, and they've got a lot of new faces on the Knockout side of the roster that I think could benefit from working with Gail Kim over the last 5 months.
Yeah, I enjoyed this. Bruce Mitchell has said before, but sometimes you just need like an honest, genuine, good moment in wrestling. So watching this was one of those moments, because I kept expecting like Sienna to come out and, you know, wait just a second, Gail, something like that. So it was nice to see it play out until they went into the next segment.
I was going to get to that.
Adonis and Swole.
Oh,
yeah, go ahead.
That was terrible. So as Gail Kim is going back up the ramp, Chris Adonis walks down and walks right past her with no music. He sort of got an argument with the two ridiculously jacked up guys from Swole Mates, a new show that's going to be on Pop, I think they said next week. Whoop-de-doo, I can't wait. And these two guys are cartoonishly huge. I mean, they don't look like they're actual human beings. There's no way they pass a wellness policy test, I'll put it that way. They ended up jumping the rail and getting in the ring and arguing with Chris Adonis for several minutes, but there was no microphone. So we just watched these guys argue in the ring without a mic, and the announcers were trying to figure out what was going on. Chris Adonis took off his shirt and flexed, and these guys took off their shirts and flexed. And I don't know their names. I don't care what their names are. The guy in the white shirt looks, like I said, cartoonishly huge. And then Eli Drake came out, and referees broke it up, and the blah, 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 blah. I thought it was a waste of time. The thing I wrote in my report is it's been reported that the pop deal for Impact is barter. They're not making money off it as much as they just split the advertising. If that's the case, I don't feel like they should feel compelled to do a or to commit television time to a ridiculous promo like this. It's not like Pop TV is paying them a lot of money in rights fees and they're trying to give something back. You know, this to me was a giant waste of time. I also think it hurt Chris Adonis. I mean, Chris Adonis's whole gimmick is his physique. That is literally what his gimmick is, and they put him in the ring with two guys who are on more steroids than probably is humanly possible, and they dwarfed Chris Adonis. I mean, they made him look like he was, you know, an Olympic swimmer. These guys were huge. So you took a guy whose whole gimmick is he's jacked up, he's got the physique. I mean, his last name is Adonis. And they put him in there to look tiny against these two guys that are just cartoon characters. Like I said, I thought the whole thing was bad. I thought it was a bad decision to put Adonis in the ring across from them. I thought it was a bad decision to have them in the ring at all to begin with. And I wouldn't be shocked. I mean, look, they were in the ring tonight. Who knows? They're debuting next week. I fully expect these two guys to be involved in some sort of match against Eli Drake and Chris Adonis. We talked about celebrity use with D'Angelo Williams. I was okay with that. These guys aren't even celebrities. They have no business being on the show. Giant waste of time. And another second that they commit to these two is just more wasted time, because I thought it was horrible.
Agreed. Awful. I mean, it's one of those things where within this narrative, within this world, these are two trained fighters. They're supposed to be two of the toughest men on the planet. Why would they be intimidated by the swole guys? Even if they're bigger, they should know all these crazy moves to take them down and beat them up. But the world of wrestling doesn't follow that logic. So bigger equals better. And I hope it's not a match. A match or a pose down, I'm sure, is coming within the next couple weeks. And it's going to be terrible.
Yeah. You know, what concerns me is that they end up with someone comes out and tries to defend these guys. And then there's like a six man or something, like, who knows? But the guy in the white shirt, his shoulders looked like they were the size of basketballs. I mean, they literally looked like cartoon characters. They didn't even look like actual human beings. It was just a giant waste of time. And I think it, you know, not that they've built up Chris Adonis all that much, but I think it hurts Chris Adonis. I think it's going to ultimately hurt Eli Drake too. I mean, if Eli Drake, who they should be preparing to have a much bigger role, was part of a team that lost to D'Angelo Williams at Slammiversary, I don't really have an issue with that. You know, we've talked about that. But if you're going to follow that up a few weeks later with him being part of a team that loses to some swole guys, the swole mates, which is going to be on a show that pretty much no one else is going to see because not a ton of people watch Pop TV, let's be honest. If you're going to put them in some type of match with these guys, and then these guys are going to probably pin Chris Adonis again, it's just killing two of these guys on your roster for no reason. If Pop TV were paying Global Force $1 million an episode, okay, you know, I get it. You want to give back a little bit. That's not the case here. I thought it was a giant waste of time.
Right. No, I mean, I was just going to say, yeah. Eli Drake should be, I would take him over Alberto El Patron as the champion right now.
Yep.
All things, you know, with all this news coming out. So he should not be this low down on the card and having to do this silly stuff.
Totally agree. After that, they went to a mini match from AAA in Mexico. Octagoncito beat Dimas in about 5 minutes. I thought this was a pretty good match. I mean, it was pretty cool. I thought it was different. It changed the pace a little bit. I don't think this is something they could do every week, you know, with the minis from AAA, but you sprinkle it in every few weeks, once a month, as a sort of a special attraction. I thought it was fine. These guys can do some of the things that the bigger guys can't do, and I thought the match was okay. You know, I thought there was some good athleticism. I thought it was a pretty good match, and like I said, can't do it every week, but I think every couple of weeks, if you have a relationship with AAA and you want to sprinkle in something like this, I'm fine with it.
Yeah, I was more just confused. Like, why am I watching this? Who are these people? I'm not totally against the idea if they want to make it a more of a regular thing and establish some characters. I just thought it was a very random and strange introduction. So I didn't, it just didn't quite hook me.
Yeah, I think they need to do a better job of explaining who they are and why they're there and say, okay, you know what, these guys, it's a special attraction match. These guys are from AAA. Here's who they are. Here's what they've done. I think they could have done a better job giving us a little more history. Also, this was the second during this match, and I noted this, Octagon Cito, I believe they said, is the one of the only people that has earned the name Mini Rey Mysterio. They also made a Rey Mysterio, El Patron, made a Rey Mysterio reference in the opening promo segment. And I believe they made another, the announced team made another Rey Mysterio reference during the main event, I believe, as well. So Rey Mysterio mentioned quite a bit on this episode. I don't know if that was just, you know, by chance or if that's ultimately going to lead to something. But I believe, you know, Rey Mysterio is wrestling with AAA now in Mexico. They have a working relationship with AAA. So whether or not that leads to something, who knows? But I thought it was interesting, you know, that he was referenced as many times as he was on the on this show tonight.
Yeah, it'd be cool to see. I mean, they could definitely use some goodwill right now and some positive buzz. I think he had talked recently about them contacting him, and he sounded open to the idea. He's one of, you know, one of the biggest names out there who's not locked in with WWE. So I think it'd be a good move for him at this point.
And maybe he's a good replacement for El Patron. You know, if they were to move on from El Patron, I think that's a trade if you're GFW you take, because I think you can clearly trust Rey Mysterio to stay out of trouble. I think you swap out El Patron with Rey Mysterio in your roster and sort of find a way to get the belt on Rey Mysterio and do whatever you're going to do with El Patron, but do it with Mysterio. I think it works much better, and people would, you know, be much happier with that direction at this point. After a break, they went to the Grand Championship match. We talked about that with Kylan a little bit earlier on. Marufuji beats Moose after EC3 comes in and hits Marufuji with the ring bell, but Moose retains the championship because of the disqualification. You know, we talked about it earlier, so we don't really have to go into it too much, but sort of over it, typical formula for these types of matches, and it just was what it was.
Yep, it was fine. It was just my complaints earlier, too slow for whatever they're trying to accomplish, which is not clear at all.
Trevor Lee then came to the ring. He cut a promo on calling himself the new X Division champion. I actually was really entertained by this Trevor Lee promo. He said he was looking for the best competition. He found William Weeks, who was on the show a few months ago, getting squashed by Kongo Kong. I described him at the time and tonight as a very James Ellsworth-looking fellow. And then in the match, Trevor Lee beats William Weeks in about a minute. I don't know where they're going with Trevor Lee. We've talked about him in the past. He's probably the guy with the most untapped potential on the entire show. I'm happy to see that he got promo time. I'm happy to see that they're sort of dropping, even though he hasn't changed his look, they're dropping the whole caveman thing where he's grunting and not really speaking much. I thought that this was good. You know, I don't think that the feud with Sanjay Dutt is going to be particularly good. I would have liked to see that with somebody else. I think you're seeing better talent in the Super X Cup than you are with Sanjay Dutt against Trevor Lee. But I think that if it ultimately leads to Trevor Lee versus Sanjay Dutt and Trevor Lee actually winning the X Division title and then going on to feud with people like ACH or some of these other guys that we see in the Super X Cup, then I'm excited about what that could be for the X Division moving forward.
Yeah, I enjoyed the segment. I know Shane Helms left the company lately with some more will bad news for TNA, but I think it'll work out well for Trevor Lee. Now he gets to talk on his own. He showed tonight that he can, so I'm all for any sort of a singles push that he's going to get.
The other thing I noticed here is the crowd didn't seem, I mean, Sanjay Dutt ran in after the match and tried to get his belt back, and he didn't succeed. Trevor Lee ended up getting it and running back up the ramp, but it didn't seem like the crowd reacted very much at all to Sanjay Dutt's run-in. I mean, his title win in India was over, and the people were excited there, but his appearance here, the running in through the crowd and trying to steal the belt back, or not steal, but get his belt back, the crowd just didn't seem to react to it at all.
Yeah, no, I caught that too, yeah.
After that, Laurel Van Ness beat Ava Story in about 3 minutes. Then Grado came out. He was trying to ask Laurel Van Ness out on a date because Joseph Park said that the U.S. and their, quote, orange-haired president is trying to kick Grado out of the country. So if you didn't hate Donald Trump before, he's trying to kick Grado out of the country. Grado needs to marry someone in order to stay in the U.S. He was trying to ask Laurel Van Ness out on a date. I thought Laurel was really good here. As silly and dumb as this segment was, I thought Laurel, I'm very much entertained by the crazy Laurel Van Ness, and I thought her reactions here were really good. But Grado did not succeed. Congo Kong came in, or ran down from the ring entrance and chased off Grado and Joseph Park. Again, like I said, kind of a silly segment, but I was pretty entertained by the reactions from Laurel here.
Yes, this was a guilty pleasure as well. I laughed a couple of times at the Grado stuff tonight. This may just be me, but it's so weird now that every week Laurel Van Ness, like, her dress is more haggard. It gets shorter.
It is getting short. I noticed that.
Okay. I didn't know if it was just me. I'm like, it just looks like she's wrestling in underwear now,
yeah,
which is like, feels so weird in this era. So I don't know if she needs a new dress or just to cover up a bit more.
Like I said, it's a guilty pleasure though. I think she's doing some good stuff. Her facial reactions to Grado and a couple of those lines tonight, I thought were really good. After that, they went to a commercial. They came back. They had ring entrances for the main event and then got to the main event. And in the main event, Alberto El Patron and Bobby Lashley beat LAX. After the match, LAX beat down El Patron in the ring. And Lashley, who saved El Patron earlier in the show, sort of stood there and watched LAX beat up El Patron. He went backstage, and the show ended with LAX draping El Patron in their flag as the show went off the air. Sort of like the opening segment, Andrew, I thought this was a pretty good match, to be quite honest with you. I like Santana and Ortiz. I think they're really good as tag team wrestlers. They're really athletic. They're a really good team. I think they do some innovative stuff. I thought El Patron and Bobby Lashley were good here too. But sort of like with that opening promo segment, it just felt a little uncomfortable knowing what has gone on this week watching El Patron in the ring.
Completely agree. And just from a storyline perspective, I don't like to see the Take Champs lose to two guys who have just teamed together for the first time, because they kept putting over how LAX was this amazing unit and so, you know, well together, and then they were beaten. And then the third thing we talked about briefly before was that Bobby Lashley is now back to being a heel while he was a face earlier in the night. So just a mess from that perspective as well.
So that was what happened on this week's episode. We are going to take another timeout. Then Andrew and I are going to come back with our top three. And this week it's our top three Samoa Joe matches in TNA. We'll be back in just a moment. You're listening to the PW Torch Livecast.
We know you're a pro wrestling fan because you're listening to the PW Torch Livecast. There's a good chance you're also a fan of the UFC and all of mixed martial arts. And if so, we hope you'll check out our sister website at MMATorch.com, covering the news of MMA every single day with breaking news, exclusive analysis, an array of columns, live event coverage, flashbacks, and so much more. Check it out. That's MMATorch.com, or download the free MMA Torch app in the iPhone and Android app stores. That's MMATorch.com.
All right, back here on the PW Torch Livecast post-GFW Impact show. Mike McMahon and Andrew Socek with you. We are here every Thursday at 10 p.m. Eastern as soon as Impact goes off the air. Every week we bring you a top three. This week, with Samoa Joe challenging Brock Lesnar this past Sunday for the WWE Universal title, Andrew and I are bringing you our top three Samoa Joe matches in TNA. Andrew, let's kick it off. What do you have as your number three Samoa Joe match in TNA?
Number three. So this isn't quite a best. It's maybe a guilty pleasure or a favorite.
Sure.
I'm going with Samoa Joe versus Scott Steiner, Slammiversary 2006. Mainly because I thought Steiner was completely washed up at this point. His WWE run was a disaster. He was older. He was in his mid-40s at this point. I thought it was going to be a complete dud. It was a really good match, and they put Joe over clean, which was not something they did at that time much with former WWE, WCW stars. So just very pleasantly surprised with the match.
That was actually on my short list too. I didn't go with it, but on, you know, as you sort of go through here, as we've done the last few weeks when we've done this, we've talked about how we end up with, you know, a list of maybe 8 or 9 that we end up having to choose from. This was on my list to choose too. I thought it was really good, and like you said, you know, Samoa Joe carried a big star like Scott Steiner, but a guy that was well past his prime at this point, to a very entertaining match. I had it on my short list as well.
Oh yeah, just way better than it had any right to be.
My number 3 was from Turning Point 2009. It was a triple threat for the TNA World Title: AJ Styles versus Samoa Joe versus Christopher Daniels. And this might be one of my favorite triple threat or multi-man singles matches of all time. You know, triple threat, fatal four-way, whatever it is. I just thought that these three guys in particular. Also, for a long time, these three guys were sort of the epitome of TNA. It's what they had been built around, especially like in the early or mid-2000s as they were really starting to get going during those Fox Sports and early Spike eras. I thought this was a great triple threat match for the title. I thought it was, you know, Samoa Joe at this point was a bona fide main eventer, but I really thought it elevated a guy like Christopher Daniels even more. This was one of those examples of a match where Samoa Joe, who was a big star at this point, and Christopher Daniels was a star, and it had been around a while, but I thought Daniels elevated himself, or was able to elevate himself to a new level within, you know, his standing in the company coming out of a match working with Samoa Joe like this. And of course, you throw AJ Styles in there too, and it's just, you know, icing on the cake. Styles, one of the best wrestlers in the world at that point, probably still is. So, I loved everything about this triple threat. I actually went back and watched the three matches that I picked. I went back and watched over the course of the last couple days as well, and really, really loved this match from start to finish.
Yeah, great match. It was very cool that they came back to it after it was such a storied feud for them. And I think it was shortly before Bischoff and Hogan came in, so they kind of let the wrestlers carry the shows. I could be wrong, but a very interesting time in the company right there.
I believe it was, yeah. I believe it was before the Bischoff and Hogan era came in. And like you said, it was sort of a lot more wrestling-focused at that point. What was your number 2?
I am also going with the Joe Styles-Daniels match, but I am going Unbreakable 2005.
The first one.
This just blew my mind. Yeah. Oh, man, I loved this back in college. I remember I bought that DVD, and I've seen the match a few times. I think it was the Torches 2005 match of the year. Just fantastic cutting-edge stuff that just blew away anything you could find in WWE at that time in terms of athleticism and acrobatics. And just really, I think, kind of put TNA on the map in a sense of giving them a lot of positive buzz that they never had to that point.
And that's, you know, Joe was a part of so many of those buzzworthy moments for TNA in the early to mid 2000s, or I think, you know, he joined the company, I think, in 2005. So, in those mid 2000 years, I think he was a part of a lot of those buzzworthy matches. And another one that I had picked as my number 2 and another buzzworthy match was, Samoa Joe versus Kurt Angle from Lockdown in 2008. This was obviously Lockdown was a cage match, but this is the one where they really went heavy on the MMA style. Kurt Angle wore fight shorts and bare feet into the ring, just like he would if he was, you know, fighting in the UFC. They really went MMA heavy in this match. It was innovative at the time, and it's one of my favorite matches, just because it's so unique. And, you know, Brock Lesnar, I think, tries to bring in, obviously, an MMA element to what he's doing now, but this at times felt like an MMA fight between Samoa Joe and Kurt Angle. And it was, you know, Angle and Joe was the match everybody wanted to see when Angle first joined the company the previous fall. And they had already gone to that match a few times, but this was the one where, to me, this was my favorite Joe-Angle match because there was a lot of unique elements here. And I think also being an MMA fan, it really struck a chord with me. And I thought that they pulled off the MMA feel really, really well, whereas other guys, I think, could have tried to do something like this and just would have failed epically because it wouldn't have looked good. These guys were legitimate enough and have trained enough in those disciplines to really make it look good, and I really, really like this match a lot. It was one of my favorite
90 favorite seconds.
Matches. Yeah, excellent match. I wish that was the direction the company would have gone because I think Joe fought Booker T., the next few months, and it just kind of went back to normal. But yeah, a fantastic match.
For those unaware, we are going to go off the air here in about a minute or so. Our live feed is going to end, but you can listen to the rest of the show. It'll be available on the podcast version of the show. So if you subscribe to the show on iTunes or any of your podcast apps, you will get the full show, even though the live feed is going to cut off. If you are on hold listening to us through a phone line right now, you will also hear the end of the show live. So no issues there. Andrew, what did you have as your number one Samoa Joe match?
I'm also going to do a Joe Angle match. I'm going to do Turning Point 2006, which was their second singles match. The first one just did not deliver.
Yeah.
It was 13 minutes. I think Angle had a concussion in the match. He beat Joe clean, just a huge disappointment to me at the time. The sequel was much better. I think there was a ref bump and some nonsense, but it was just what I had wanted to see in that
first
match.
I
remember watching it with friends and just screaming for Joe to win. So an exciting match. And yeah, in my mind, I know there's plenty of matches you could debate which is his best one, but that was definitely my personal favorite.
My personal favorite, my number one, was all the way back at Genesis 2005, and this was Samoa Joe's first year in the company. I believe he had come in that summer, and he was up against AJ Styles at Genesis 2005. And the way they booked this, Joe came in, he was coming out of Ring of Honor. He was sort of the unstoppable monster. He was just a heel that was bowling through everybody. I mean, he was bulldozing people every single week, and he was beating up people on a weekly basis. He was a killer. You know, Joe's going to kill you. It's not there by accident. You know, that's what people were cheering because he was killing everybody. And they had lined this up as sort of AJ Styles being the last line of defense. And I like the story of this match. I watched it again this week and you get invested in it again right away, even though it's been 12 years since this match happened almost. But knowing the background, and I thought the announcing was good too, to sort of give us what the background was. But it was just, I thought it was a fantastic storytelling from start to finish. Probably not only my favorite Samoa Joe match, one of my favorite TNA matches of all time, because this wasn't the most athletic. I mean, they had some other matches, and Joe certainly has had some other matches that were more physical and more brutal and had more athletic moves. But this was just the storytelling in this match is what I think is missing in a lot of pro wrestling today. This was just about a guy who was a monster, who was running through everybody. And here's AJ Styles, the last line of defense, Mr. TNA, who was up there to try to stop him. I love the story in this match, and it's probably one of my favorite matches the company's ever put on.
Oh, I agree. Fantastic match. And Joe was just so much fun to watch at that time. Like you said, he was just tearing through people, and his kicks and punches, he just gave a realism that made you feel bad for the guys he was fighting, and he got you invested and made you think it was real during his contest. And AJ was just, I mean, he's, you know, arguably the best in the world now. He was, you know, just as amazing back then in a slightly different way. Yeah, they just worked magic together. I saw him at a house show once, and it was a fantastic match, and there was probably 400 people there. But yeah, just time and time again, they delivered. Throw in Christopher Daniels, and they just had months worth of really entertaining pay-per-view matches.
All right, well, that is our top three this week. We'll have another category for our top three next week. We're going to go to our last break. It's going to be a quick one here. This one's going to tell you all about PW Torch VIP. Then when Andrew and I come back from this break, we'll wrap up the show, give you some closing thoughts. But this is all about PW Torch VIP. If you're not a VIP member, you can do so by going to pwtorch.com/goVIP. Plenty of podcasts. I mean, if you like podcasts like this, you're going to love VIP. There's hours and hours and hours of podcasts every week. When you are a VIP member, you'll get podcasts from Bruce Mitchell, Todd Martin, Sean Radican, everybody. Wade Keller does a daily hotline. I mean, the amount of audio is off the charts, and that doesn't even go. That doesn't even dip into the print content you will get if you're a VIP member, getting access to the VIP exclusive columns and, of course, the PW Torch newsletter on a weekly basis. So here's a little bit about PW Torch VIP. When we come back for this break, Andrew and I will wrap things up. You're listening to the PW Torch Livecast.
If you're a fan of the PW Torch Livecast, you might want to consider a PW Torch VIP membership. When you do that, you get access to an exclusive RSS feed of not only ad-free, plug-free versions of every single PW Torch Livecast, but also over 50 other VIP exclusive podcasts per month, including the Every Single Day Wade Keller Hotline. I also host three other flagship VIP exclusive podcasts: The Midweek Fix with Todd Martin, The Weekend Bruce Mitchell Audio Show, each about 2 hours in length, and the post-pay-per-view roundtables with a one-hour analysis of every WWE pay-per-view and some other ones too. Also, ad-free access to pwtorchvip.com, and that is mobile-friendly and PC and desktop-friendly, and also access to almost three decades of the Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter, dating back to the late 1980s, over 1,400 back issues, with my pay-per-view reports on every single pay-per-view match since the late 1980s, with star ratings and match descriptions, roundtable reviews from the staff on every pay-per-view, cover stories on the biggest story every single week in pro wrestling, march through them as a VIP member 1 week at a time, read our exclusive Torch Talks with pro wrestling's biggest names, hard-hitting editorials, backstage tidbits you will not hear anywhere else, and much more. It's all available. Check out details at pwtorch.com/govip. That's pwtorch.com/govip. Exclusive podcasts, exclusive new newsletters every week, ad-free access to our website, and access to 28-plus years of archives. It's all waiting for you if you go VIP. Find out more details, a checklist of all the benefits of being a VIP member, along with testimonials from current members and a sign-up form that's mobile-friendly. It takes about 90 seconds to sign up. Go check it out today, pwtorch.com/govip.
All right, we're going to wrap things up here on this week's edition of the Post-Impact PW Torch Livecast. Andrew, any closing thoughts, and where can people find you on Twitter, and anything else you want to add before we get out of here?
Yeah, I mean, overall, I thought Impact was entertaining tonight, more so than it has been, but it's too bad that it's being dragged down by the El Patron situation right now. And yeah, that's just going to be the talk of the company for the next few weeks and how that all pans out, unless something happens soon. Otherwise, you can find me at pwpodcast.com. I post a lot of things there. We just cover wrestling podcasts and quotes and interviews from other interviews that wrestlers do. We cover all the biggest shows: Jim Ross, Bruce Pritchard, Steve Austin, Family Friendly, and Unleashed. So come to the site, check out what the recaps are. If you don't have time to listen to all these shows, you will get a great read out of all those different podcasts. Otherwise, find me at Andrew Socek, S-O-U-C-E-K, on Twitter. I just usually complain about Impact and Raw. That's about it.
You can find me on Twitter at Mike McMahon, P-W. McMahon spelled just like Vince, just like Kylan pointed out earlier, at Mike McMahon PW on Twitter. And that's about it. I think that's all we got for this week. So there was a lot of one of our longer shows, but obviously a lot to discuss between the Jeff Jarrett conference call and the El Patron situation this week as well. So a lot going on. I think, you know, people at Global Force would much rather us be talking about the show, but the show was almost sort of an afterthought on this program tonight with everything else going on around the company. So I think that will do it, though, for this week. We appreciate you guys for calling. We appreciate you guys for listening. And until next week, I am Mike McMahon. He is Andrew Socek. We'll talk to you 1 week from tonight, 10 p.m., as soon as Impact Wrestling goes off the air here on the PW Torch Livecast Impact Post Show.